that's where I kind of came up with the strategy that I call weaponized adversity, which is you take that negative thing and you use it as fuel and kind of flip those headwinds into tailwinds, and you end up accomplishing more. Cause I'm like, I literally, if I sit idle at all for the next 90 days or 6 months, however long it takes me to get through it, it ended up taking me a year to get fully back to health. But I was like, wow, if I sit idle, I'm going to mentally implode.
Great experiences build great leaders. Great leaders build great teams. This is Building Great Sales Teams.
All right, guys, we are going live today with Building Great Sales Teams, and I've got a very special guest for you. I met him at an Apex Entrepreneurs meetup in the first quarter. He's the co-founder of Ascendant, which is a paid ads agency, as well as Syntonium, an email and SMS marketing agency. And he's launching a new e-commerce brand in May, but let's be quiet about that for now because it's not out yet. He's an expert in digital marketing and sales, specializing in SaaS, e-commerce, and home service verticals. He's done over 100 million in paid ads managed, over 1 billion in sales generated, and took a tech startup from 1 million to 100 million in ARR in 4 years, and was part of a $1 billion exit. Mason, welcome to the show, brother.
Doug, thanks for having me.
Man, this is awesome. Quite the resume. So we're going to kick it off. We're going to get right into it. And this is something that you like to talk about. Why is there always friction between marketing and sales, and how do we squash that friction?
That's a great question. And something that I'm personally really proud of, because I've managed to build really good relationships with a lot of the sales directors and sales VPs that I've worked with prior to starting my own company. I mean, I think a lot of it is, it comes down to communication. It's just not talking enough between the two departments, and not enough of a relationship being built is what it comes down to. Because when you're just firing emails back and forth, it's like, oh, the leads suck. No, the leads don't suck. Your sales team sucks. Oh, no, they're just not following up. Or like, you know what I mean? No, you're targeting the wrong place, marketing. It's like, you know, there's like these stereotypical back and forths that always happen. And a lot of times the truth is somewhere in the middle. And so I think it comes down to, you need to have a relationship, a tight relationship. The marketing leader needs to have that with the sales leader, so that they're seeing them as a person and a friend and not an adversary, and you're working towards a common goal. And then just vulnerability, because sometimes it is going to be marketing's fault. I've had those instances where I tried a new campaign or new targeting or new channel, and the leads did suck. Like, yeah, they were coming in like crazy, but the quality wasn't there. And there's been times too when my counterpart on the sales side, I've gone in and been like, hey man, like, this lead got called one time and it sat, and, you know, or hey, your activity's way, way down. And so it ebbs and flows. It goes back and forth depending on what the cause is, but you need to have that tight relationship and have that vulnerability in order to avoid the friction and have good data that you can actually point to, because a lot of these conversations also end up with a lot of emotion and not a lot of facts and data behind them to actually discuss. So if you have good data, you have a good relationship, and you have vulnerability and work towards that common problem, that solves a lot of it. But again, that's a rarity. It's something that I've been able to achieve with a couple of the amazing sales directors and VPs that I've worked with. But I know that is a rarity. And that wasn't the dynamic at these companies that I worked at before starting my own. It wasn't the dynamic when I came in. It was the typical kind of butting heads, you know, type of situation. So, and I would say now for me, I'm in a different place too, now owning my own companies. My partner and I are very much the salesperson's marketers. He actually has a biz dev background. So even though he's now a marketer by trade, his background is in sales. And we run our own ads, generate our own leads, work those leads, set our own appointments. So when we talk with our clients or our client sales teams and the leads aren't good, or there's a struggle or a breakdown in the sales process, like, we understand that because we're some of the only marketers in the world that run our own ads and that have our own inbound system and that work our own leads. Most marketers have never gotten on the phone ever to close a lead, or at least not one that's not a referral or word of mouth, because that's how most agencies work, is referrals, word of mouth, super warm leads. We actually work leads, you know, that are not quite that warm, that just clicked on an ad, that don't know a lot about us. And so, again, we can empathize and understand when we talk to our clients' sales teams, what they're dealing with, because we are both salespeople and marketers. So as much as a marketer can put themselves in that salesperson's seat and get some of that experience, or even just listen to calls, you know, if you're not in a position to be able to actually work some leads, that helps a lot with just the understanding and the communication and reducing that friction between the two teams.
And that's massive, brother. And there's three major things that I heard there. The first one was sourcing the right people. The second one was developing the right relationships between head of marketing and head of sales, right? And then the third one was KPIs, which is my favorite conversation because the KPIs don't lie. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so I feel like that is a massive and three-pronged approach to it that I think has obviously worked really well for you and the companies that you've worked with. So, you know, speaking of that, a $1 billion exit from your previous employer, did you get a piece of that?
Yeah, we went through two transactions, actually. So we raised money times. There were two changes in control. And yeah, I got paid on both changes in control. So we did around about 3 years in, where I believe, I want to say we were valued at a nine-figure number. I want to say it was around 400 mil. And then a year later, 18 months later, we did our $1 billion recap. So yeah, I got some money on both of those. So it was a great experience. You know, it was definitely, you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into a startup, into building a company that fast at that scale, especially once the PE firms come in, it's a whole different level in terms of the pressure and what you've got to hit. It's really not worth the salary. Like the reason you do it is for those stock options and for that cash out. So yeah, I was fortunate enough to get some on both of those transactions.
What advice would you have for, you know, some of these companies that are maybe hitting that 10, 15, 20 million mark, especially in home services that are looking to get acquired eventually by PE, since you've gone through that process?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, man, that's definitely a loaded question. There's so many elements. I mean, the due diligence alone takes 6+ months. You know, once you find somebody that, you know, wants to date or wants to get married, that courtship is easily 3 to 6 months long to go through the DD. And I mean, I guess my biggest advice would be honest with your numbers, have good business fundamentals. It will all get found out. It is the most detailed process in terms of everything that they go through. And they have smart people analyzing them. Like I remember as head of marketing, they were like, well, we want to see all your spend across all your keywords, across all your ads, across all your audiences for the last 24 months. And I downloaded this giant, like multi-gigabyte Excel sheet that was probably 100,000 lines. And I kind of turned it over to him. I'm like, all right, go nuts. Like, you're not going to be able to sift through this. This is so much data. There's no way you're going to like be able to understand this. And then I walked into a meeting the next day and I got grilled for an hour on super detailed questions. Like they knew it. Like I gave them all the data so much. I'm like, there's no way anybody's going to be able to process through this and really understand what we do and how, you know, what drives the business. They had it pinned in 24 hours and we did a great job. And so there wasn't any skeletons in the closet that came out during the conversation. Right. But my point is that's how smart their analysts are and how detailed they are. So if you try to BS anything on the front end, it's going to come out and your valuation is going to get knocked down. So really just run a tight ship, have good books, have real numbers, have good business fundamentals, because anything that you try to fudge is absolutely going to come to light.
No, that makes a ton of sense. And yeah, it's definitely going to come to light because these guys are pros, you know, I can imagine, you know, in my head, I was already trying to work through, okay, how would I analyze that data? And I went right to ChatGPT right away. I was like, I would just drop it into ChatGPT and start asking ChatGPT questions, right? Now we can do that. I'm sure they've been doing that for years already. They already have softwares and systems that run those plays maybe.
You know, I'm not really sure, because when we went through this, this was now about three years ago, I want to say, 3-4 years ago. So ChatGPT wasn't around yet. I believe it was the analyst that was primarily like a person was analyzing this, but he was a super, super smart dude. Now, yeah, even more so, I'm sure that they're using ChatGPT or even they call them generative BI programs. I just was at a conference where I looked at one, and you could drop all your data into this thing and ask it any question about your data and have it spit out a chart and visualizations if you wanted to. It's a program called called Accio. I'm not like an affiliate or anything, but it's a sweat program.
Badass. Most definitely. All right. So you exited you exited that company, and then I'm assuming you stayed on for a certain amount of time. Maybe it was in your contract, and then you were able to move on after that.
No, so that time I actually didn't. So that time we had actually already set the transition in place, knowing that a sale was going to happen. Okay. And so my goal that I had set was I want to get to the $1 billion transaction, and then I kind of want to be done after that. I just done it for long enough. I had my own company, so I was building on the side that I really wanted to go all in on. And so what we had done was, I want to say actually close to 6 months, almost 4 to 6 months before the deal actually closed, I had sat down with our CEO and COO, and we had gone and hired a new CMO to take my place. And so we had hired him knowing that I was going to be ready to be out, knowing that this transaction was coming. So we hired him. I trained him. Him and I worked together for 5-6 months, however long it was. And then once we got to that point of the $1 billion transaction coming in, that's when I was like, all right, cool. You guys are good. See ya. And so that's kind of how that worked. So there was a transition plan. And it was actually a really cool dynamic, you know, because a lot of times a new person comes in, and this guy is older than me, has more experience than me as well. Not to take a dump on my own experience, but you know, he's had 10 years on me and had done some big stuff too. And so he was definitely the right guy to kind of take us to the next level. But him and I, he came in, and you know, sometimes there's friction when you know you get a new leader in, and especially working together for that long. And it was honestly a great dynamic. And he's actually one of our partners now. We work with him. He's a fractional CMO now. We work with him on multiple different companies. So it was a really great scenario, super atypical, but you know, kind of got a lifelong friendship and a great partner out of it as well. So kind of cool how that situation worked out there with that transition plan, sort of atypical.
No, that's fantastic. And really playing the long game and communicating and building that relationship. That's huge. So what have you been doing since then?
Yeah. So since then, so I had been building my own little freelance marketing agency on the side called Ascend It. That has been around for about 7 years now. I've been full time on it since leaving. Stacks was the name of the company that we did the $1 billion exit out of. But that I exited that company about 3 years ago now. And so I had been building our agency along with my business partner for a couple of years. He went full time on the business first, like 2 years before I did. And then when we went through the $1 billion exit, then I said, okay, I'm coming over. I'm joining full time. And so we've been working on Ascend It, which is primarily paid ads, performance marketing, building landing pages, doing conversion rate optimization. And then since then, last year, we launched Centonium, which is an email and SMS agency. And that just came out of our clients needed email and SMS marketing. And we started doing it for them because we were getting them new customers from the paid ads. And then the LTV wasn't very good because the founder, or the owner didn't really know what they were doing, or there wasn't an email marketing person. So we ended up bolting that onto a couple clients and delivering significantly better performance. It gave us more control of the customer journey. Now we have the whole customer lifetime that we're in charge of. And so we did that for several clients. And we were like, you know, we kind of need to make this its own thing because we're doing it so frequently. And so that was the advent of Centonium. It was us spinning that service off into its own brand. And it's also more affordable than paid ads. Paid ads is expensive. You've got to pay us. You've got to pay the, you know, Meta and Google, versus with email, it's like, it's a couple $1,000 a month. There's no more cost. It pays for itself in month one, or you don't pay. That's our offer. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really good at, you know, this system for e-com. And so that's been kind of the most recent project in terms of agencies. And then even more so, like you said earlier in the intro, we've got our own e-com brand that we're going to be launching here pretty soon in May. We've been doing this for other people for 7+ years. We've worked on 50 plus brands, had multiple brands that we've launched from 0 to 1. And so we always knew we're going to learn this. We're going to work on other people's companies. We're going to see the good, bad, and the ugly. And then at some point, we're going to find a product that's the perfect product for us. We're going to take all this knowledge that we've learned working on other people's businesses and launch our own. So that's coming up in May, kind of that next phase of our business.
No, that's exciting. And I would imagine it's only going to help Ascend It and Centonium, because you can go to your clients and say, hey, I'm doing it too. I'm going through everything you're going through.
Yeah.
And this is what we're doing. And your test case is your own business, you know, which I'm sure you have hundreds of other test cases too.
Yeah, awesome. We do, but it's definitely a different level of trust when you have your own and you can say, I am doing this for myself. This is working for me. I'm spending my own dollars. It adds a different level of just trust factor when you're trying to pitch a business owner on a new tactic or a new strategy. Mm-hmm.
So I just got off a discovery call with an agency owner, and they've been doing it for 11 years, and they don't have a sales process in place. You know, so I was talking to him about that sales. Yeah, which is crazy. 11 years, right? And but you can tell it probably just wasn't top of mind, and maybe more of a side hustle to this point, you know. And so,
okay,
what? How can agency owners improve their sales processes?
So a couple different things there. One is just having a good deck. It's and having a couple decks for each vertical that you serve.
I love that first answer. I got to stuff you there because that's literally what I showed her the whole time. I was like, this is because, you know, I worked with the agency in the past and I was a partner with them and I handled all the sales and I sold like 200 grand. Right. And it was like in a couple of months, but it's because I had a simple deck that they could see. Okay, here's three packages. You know, low, medium, and high. And I love that's your first answer. We're on the same page here. Continue.
Yeah, it's amazing how many agencies don't have even a slideshow presentation to walk people through. You know, they just kind of have conversations. So that's a huge piece. That's something we've had for a while, but we didn't always have it. You know, it's much better to show than to tell. So that's just kind of where that comes in. And having it tailored to the verticals that you serve, that helps too. If you can niche down some, you know, we primarily 90% of our business is in three verticals. And so, and we've designed it that way on purpose. We used to take everything we've niched down because we can do a better job, have a higher rate of success. You know, it's kind of a rinse, wash, repeat thing in each vertical, but even sales wise, you know, you can have a deck and a presentation that's tailored to each one, case studies tailored to each one versus if you have a one size fits all shotgun approach, you're probably gonna have a lower close rate. So, I mean, that's the big thing for us. In addition to that, this isn't just a sales thing, but this is a predictable revenue thing. Agencies tend to be heavy word of mouth, heavy referral. That is not predictable. And that is a very precarious place to be in as a business. And we used to be that way. And we went through a period about a year and a half ago where Q4 is always a tough time for us because that's when people, just for the whole industry, that's when businesses reevaluate their marketing budgets for next year. Sometimes people move jobs, et cetera. And we were much smaller back then, but this was about 2 years ago. We shrank 50% in a quarter. And that was a very scary, very painful experience. And so we were like, man, well, where do we get more business from, more leads from? And that's where we went, well, we run ads and generate leads for all these other people. Why don't we just do it for ourselves? And we built our own funnel, built our own offer. And now we have predictable revenue and the business is super, super stable. Most agencies do not have that because it's expensive. You're going to have to spend 10, 20, 30 grand in ad spend to crack that funnel, crack that offer. You're then still going to have to continue to spend money and generate leads while you work through your sales process because these are going to be colder than you've ever worked before. But the long-term payoff for the stability of your business and the longevity of your business is massive. And so that's more of a biz dev, business stability, future-proofing, not so much sales improvement. Right. But you know, your sales skills kind of don't matter if you don't have any leads coming in or you can't generate leads on demand.
Well, and it's like what you said, once you develop that avatar, you have three different avatars. You know, I guarantee your sales team is experts at those avatars. They know their business inside and out. They know what those pivot points are for them in their business. Is one of those avatars home services?
Yeah, enterprise level home services specifically. There's some local services. We're hesitant to work with smaller companies in that niche.
What does enterprise mean?
So just larger. Like an example, one of our clients is the largest roofer in the state of Florida. So those guys, you know, nine figure top line company in four different markets. Now that's like the massive end of the spectrum, but we try to work with larger companies in that space. Or somebody that's in a whole metro area. Like we've had like some HVAC companies that service all of DFW. Those are pretty sizable companies. So we try to go on the bigger end of that spectrum. Not that we won't go smaller, but what we've found particularly in that niche is smaller guys don't have their sales game together. And if the sales game's not together, it doesn't matter how many leads I generate, it's not going to close. So like we had another roofer years and years ago and we were crushing it on the lead gen. We knew the leads were quality. The guy didn't close anything and he called us just raging angry. I mean, threatening to sue us. And we're like, all right, man, well, tell me, what's your speed to lead? Didn't know. What's your close rate? Didn't know. What CRM are you using? He goes, oh, well, I just write it down on a piece of paper and stick it in my pocket because I'm out on jobs and stuff. And we're like, wait, so you don't have a salesperson? He's like, well, it's me. And so we're just like, oh man, no wonder none of this stuff's closing. His cell phone's ringing while he's on a roof. He's not answering the call. He's writing it on a slip of paper. Like, no wonder this stuff's not closing. And so that kind of taught us to ask some more qualifying questions for this particular space and make sure that there is at least one or two real salespeople who sit in an office all day and do nothing but work leads. If you don't have that, it's just not going to work. And it tends to be some of the larger companies or midsize at least that have that system set up.
No, that's a real question. Like, if I bring in these leads, can you even convert? And then like what I always ask my clients, because I'm typically the one they come to when they need the sales team, right? It's like, okay, if we put together this sales team, we start knocking it out of the park. Let's just say we double or triple your sales. Can you even fulfill? You know, so now we're getting into the operations piece. Are you even ready for that? You know, so I would imagine your process is a full process in that sense. For the smaller guys, what do you feel like, you know, these roofing companies that are at 1 million, 2 million, 5 million, what do you feel like is a pivot that they can make in order to increase their lead flow?
So, I mean, obviously it depends on what they've already got going on. The lowest hanging fruit is, you know, Google LSAs are great. You don't need an agency to run them for you. They're super easy to set up. The lead quality is really strong. So like, if you're not doing that, that's the first thing I point them to, because it's just a great lead source. Google local service ads, or it's now called Google Guarantee. Gotcha. But you know, you search roofing services near me and it's like a top little carousel, and it's got the reviews and it's got this little Google Guaranteed mark that says the company's been vetted. And you really only pay if the lead is good. If the lead is bad, you can reject it. You don't pay for it. And again, very, very easy to set up. You don't need an agency to do it. It's literally like filling out a form. So if they're not doing that, that's a great way to augment your leads. And then outside of that, I mean, there's so many different directions you can go. You know, a lot of these guys don't have a proper CRM set up. Just having a good CRM with and getting your data hygiene together, you're going to find stuff that was slipping through the cracks before. So that's another piece. A lot of times these guys at $1 million don't have that. And then let's say you're getting to the $5 million mark. It's having that dedicated salesperson, you know, dedicated inbound salesperson. All these guys have commission-based people that are knocking on doors and stuff, but you still need that person sitting in the office to take the inbound leads and even call and set the appointment for the door knocker lead, you know, that agreed to have a meeting. So just having that full-time, you know, SDR or salesperson is another big kind of jump up. Because a lot of times it's the owner or the guy who's door knocking is then following up at the end of the day or the next day. And then you've got speed to lead issues. So those are a couple kind of big pivots to make, depending on if you're in that 1 to 5 range.
Yeah. Or it's the front desk admin. And then they're basically, you know, if they have a proper. So this is a lot of what we do with the sales program is make sure that even from the front desk, they have a appointments that are script. Or a qualifying script in place so that as soon as the lead comes in, we're qualifying and assigning based on that qualification. And so another thing that we found a lot of success with is, you know, there's I don't know if you know Audie, she's got a call center based in Dallas. That's all US based reps. And they take that they're appointment setter. So they take that initial lead coming in, especially when the lead flow is high, and then qualify them and set the appointment for the closers, you know? And so that works really well too, based on what you're talking about, to make that pivot point there. Awesome. Well, before we got on the call, you were talking about at the end of Q4, y'all saw, you know, a dip coming into Q4, but were able to pull out of it. You want to walk us through how y'all are able to do that real quick?
Yeah. So like I said, 2 years ago, we had an experience where, you know, we were just younger, smaller business, hadn't been through the cycle before, at least not at that magnitude. Because when you're smaller, you have fewer clients, they stick for longer with a larger book of business. And this was also 2 years ago when things economically were really weird. Most of the churn we experienced, you know, there's controllable churn and uncontrollable churn. Most of the churn was uncontrollable, which means like somebody's cutting their budget or somebody's laying off their marketing team. And so this is 2 years ago when stuff was just economically weird. And so it wasn't that we were not performing or not delivering. It's just the economy was in a weird place. There was a lot of fear, a lot of layoffs happening. And again, half our business is in tech, right? And they were having massive layoffs back during that time. And so we shrank like 50% in just a couple of months, and that really sucked. And we got back out of that hole, but that's where we said, okay, well, we need to go set up our own ad funnel, be able to get leads on demand, create this whole system. So that system's in place now, but going into this year, we're like, okay, we know that this is probably going to happen again. Let's, you know, put a plan in place to know that we're not going to, we're going to try to shrink a lot less than 50% this time around. And so we had the ad funnel. We don't run that in November, December. Reason is a big part of our business is e-commerce. It's really, and so it's Black Friday season. So we're not trying to take on a bunch of new clients during that busy time of the year. We want to make sure that we focus on doing an amazing job for our existing book of business because it's so important for them. And then it's also a slow time for SaaS. Like nobody is looking to sign a new provider in November and December for the most part. And again, that's why it's a hard time because people cancel, but they don't sign new contracts till January, February. So we knew that was coming. And so what we did is one, we knew we were going to turn off the ad funnel for 60 days. We're going to kick it back on January 1. We didn't have that the last time we went through, you know, this kind of shrink period. The other thing that we did was just step up the old school biz dev and step up the social media. I've been, you know, building my machine and putting out content and investing in content for about 2 years now. And so that's something where I was looking at it going, okay, I need to have even more activity during this period, because sometimes that takes a back seat. You know, when the business is really busy and we've got a ton of clients and we got a ton of people onboarding, I might not necessarily post as much as I do otherwise. So I stepped up my frequency of social media posting. I also changed the type of posts. I started posting more case studies. Every time I post a case study, I am guaranteed 1 to 3 leads. So I was posting a lot more case studies. We were also being a lot more aggressive, just faster with follow-up, taking more appointments that are maybe a little bit outside of our ICP. So being a little more flexible with who we would take and who we would talk to, like kind of, you know, just having every single conversation, leaving no stone unturned versus we might, other times of the year, we might turn some people away and be like, that doesn't necessarily sound like the best fit, you know, at least having the discovery conversation versus filtering some of those people out. So broader filters. And then also, like, I went to more events, you know, Apex meetups. I went to a couple marketing conferences. So a lot of old school, just pounding the pavement and meeting people and shaking hands too. And what that resulted in, we did still shrink a little bit, but it was like 20-25%, which is basically what our target was. And we had so much pipe built because, again, it was, we thought we'd be able to close more in November, December. It was still tough closing deals. We did close one really big one in December that was like 3x the size of a normal client. And I actually took their sales call on Christmas Eve. So again, another like just doing more, just knowing this is going to be a knife fight and we're going to go to war and we're going to put forth maximum effort until we get through this period. But we had so much pipe built in January, February that like we were back above benchmark in like 45, 60 days. Which is pretty good. You know, you slide a little bit over 60 days and you get it back over the same period or less. And so that's really what it was, you know, social media, traveling to events, taking more calls than we would usually take, filtering less people and really just pounding the pavement a lot and just treating it like, okay, we're stepping on the battlefield for the next 60 days. And we are going to do whatever we got to do to close more deals, get more leads and build pipe.
Man, that's massive because, you know, especially for B2B people, understanding that, hey, this isn't the time to just like take off for the holidays and accept Q4 disappointment. You know what I'm saying? And you were strategic about it. Like, all right, I'm going to get my leads from my relationships, my influence, you know, and my tenacity. Right. And then you were able to build that pipeline up. But at the same time, you still closed if you could close, but you also knew, hey, because I'm doing all these things, I'm building that pipeline up. I also like what you said about the case studies, because I don't think people post about that enough, especially business owners between, you know, 0 and 5 million. Like if you're not posting about your clients at least every other day, then you're missing out on leads that are going to be there as you continue to post about your clients. And then I take it a step further and tag them in, and they come in and comment and affirm what you just said. And then all of a sudden you've got a live testimonial right there that lives and breathes. And anytime anybody comments on it, gets served up and served up again, you know? And so I think talking about it, you know, the work that you do versus just saying, hey, we got this going on, buy from us, or, hey, this is our offer, buy from us, or hey, who would be interested in 10 more leads this week, buy from us, you know what I mean? Yeah. Instead of doing stuff like that, it's like, hey, I'm actually in the business, I'm in it with this client, these are the results that we're getting for them, and this is their, you know, their improvement in life from that result. Mm-hmm. You know, now they just invested in new equipment, or now they just opened up a second location, or whatever the case is. I mean, that's powerful stuff right there. So I love the strategy in Q4 for sure. All right, let's pivot a little bit. You know, your accomplishments by themselves are obviously fantastic, but when you pair them with the fact that you went through cancer and blinding eye disease, mm-hmm. I'm like, all right, she's turning into Iron Man here. I'm waiting to see the Iron Man heart in the chest right now. How are you still standing after that? So walk us through your mindset.
And how you're able to
persevere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Happy to walk you through it. I might get a little emotional here because it's it was a lot to go through. And I think one of the things I say is I'm not successful in spite of cancer. I'm successful because of it. Because when I got these two diagnoses, I was in the middle of building two companies at the same time. I was in the middle of building Stax, which was the tech company that we exited. And then I was in the middle of building my agency on the side, actually. And the agency was almost kind of on the back burner then because I was working so hard on Stax and, you know, making good money there. And it was kind of still, it was just a long time ago. And so it was a very much of a side hustle thing back then. My business partner wasn't full-time on it yet either. So it was just a side hustle. And so I was on vacation with my wife and got out of bed one day and I couldn't see. I had double vision in both eyes. And so I'm like struggling just to have my balance. My depth perception's all screwed up. And I was freaking out. I'm in this hotel room like, oh my God, like I can't see. I can't barely move. I couldn't read. And so I'm just like, man, like I have to read charts and stuff for a living. Like, what am I going to do? And so we cut the vacation short, went back to Orlando, start seeing doctors. And there's like, it's like the fifth doctor that finally diagnoses me with what's going on. So that's scary too. You know, I'm going to all these different regular doctors, eye doctors. I'm getting brain scans done to see if it's a neurological thing. Finally, his doctor's like, hey, you have this, we think you have this thing called keratoconus. It's super rare. It means there's something wrong with the collagen in your eyes and they're losing their shape. And if you keep letting go, you're going to go blind because you're like, your eyes will literally explode inside your head at some point, because they're just getting weaker and degrading. And so I'm like, all right, well, what do we do about that? Like, how do we reverse it? Can I do LASIK? And they're like, no, your vision is going to be where it's at right now for the rest of your life. So you better learn how to deal with the double vision. But there is an experimental surgery that'll stop it in its tracks. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, let's do it. And they're like, insurance doesn't cover it. It's experimental. FDA just cleared it. So like, you're gonna have to pay for it out of pocket. And so I'm like, ah, geez. All right. Well, I mean, I don't have a choice. Can't go blind. So we scheduled that surgery for like 2 weeks from then. In between that time, I found a lump on my body where there wasn't supposed to be one. And so go to the doctor, cancer diagnosis. Now I have to get two surgeries. Now they're like, we got to schedule to get this tumor taken out like ASAP. And so we push the eye surgery a little bit, schedule the cancer surgery. And I'm staring just both of these two very like life altering, one potentially life ending, you know, scenarios in the face. And I remember the turning point was I was sitting in the, like the pre-op room for my cancer surgery and I'm just losing my mind. And so finally I'm like, man, I can't live in this space. I got 2 hours till the surgery. I got to sit here. And so I pulled my phone out and I hopped on Slack and I just started working. And so I'm slacking my team back at Stax going like, hey, how many leads are we at today? How many SQLs were we at today? How much pipe did we build over the last set? Like I'm just talking and checking all of our KPIs, seeing if anyone needs anything, you know, giving advice and kind of directing, just to distract myself.
They know from the surgery. Going on this time?
Sorry.
Did they know what was going on at the time?
So I told my team, I think that maybe 24 hours or 48 hours before, because I didn't want it to be a distraction. Right.
But at the same time, they're like, why is he messaging us right now? You know, I got
probably. I'm sure they were very weirded out by it. Yeah. And so I just did that until it came time to get into surgery. And then I woke up out of surgery and my wife's there. I'm like, hey, give me my phone. pop back on Slack, and I'm like, I'm probably a little loopy from the pain meds, but I hit my right hand guy up. His name's Eric. Awesome dude. But I was just like, hey man, what'd we end up at today? Cause we were also trying to push for a record that day. And so I was like, did we hit it? Did we hit that revenue record, that SQL record? And he's like, yeah, we did. And I'm like, oh hell yeah, that's awesome. And so then I just checked in with everybody else on the team. And I kind of realized, okay, if I'm so busy and so focused on other things, then I don't have time to live, you know, kind of in this negative space. Cause at this time, okay, we didn't know if I was going to have to go through chemo, if there's going to be additional surgeries. I still had the eye thing going on that I had to deal with. And so that's where I kind of came up with a strategy that I call weaponized adversity, which is you take that negative thing and you use it as fuel and kind of flip those headwinds into tailwinds, and you end up accomplishing more. Cause I'm like, I literally, if I sit idle at all for the next 90 days or 6 months, however long it takes me to get through it, it ended up taking me a year to get fully back to health. But I was like, wow, if I sit idle, I'm going to mentally implode. And so I just worked like crazy. And anytime I started getting a little down or a little bit scared, I honestly just got angry at it and just put it in all into my work. And that's where we ended up stepping on the gas on our agency. Cause at that time it was a side hustle. And I was like, well, I can't go home at night and sit still and think about this stuff. So I'm going to work like crazy during the day, leave myself no spare time when I'm working on Stacks. At night when I'm going home, I'm working on Ascendant, and I'm just going to grind and go until this other battle is out of the way. And I'll think about doctor and health stuff when I'm at the doctor, and I'm going to do everything I can to heal. I mean, like I did all kinds of crazy extra health stuff. I mean, drinking bone broth and doing green juices 3-4 times a day. I mean, like I attacked it like I was going to war too. I didn't ignore the problem. I was doing more than probably most people do when they get into that situation. But that's kind of where the mindset came from, where the toughness came from. And I mean, I had my eye surgery. This is another story. We had a board meeting the day that I had my eye surgery, and I moved my eye surgery later in the day so that I could go to the board meeting and present. Cause like, this is a startup. People are ambitious. If you're not there to represent your department, like decisions are going to get made on your behalf. And so I'm like, I did my presentation and absolutely crushed it. We had just had a record quarter. I had just been promoted. And so I was like, I'm not going to not be there. So I went, crushed that presentation, drove from my office to the eye surgery. Everybody else is in the waiting room in sweats, and I'm in a suit. And the doctor's like, where did you just come from? I was like, I just came from work. And he's like, really? Like, this is on like a Saturday. Like wasn't like a business day, but yeah, I mean, that's the experience that I went through. Again, it was about a year of complications and a lot of just problems health-wise. It wasn't smooth sailing after that. But that's part of a big reason why these two businesses grew so much, because the strategy was I'm going to get tunnel vision and just focus on building these two businesses up. I'm not going to live in this negative space. I'm not going to allow these negative thoughts to creep into my mind. And that time has allowed me, I think, to be successful as an entrepreneur because of the mental toughness that I built and because of that strategy. Cause there's been other hard stuff. I mean, I haven't faced a life threatening disease since then, but entrepreneurship,
nothing harder than that.
You know, shrinking 50% 2 years ago, I put my mindset in the same spot. This quarter, I'm like, all right, we're about to go to war. I'm going to put my mind in the same spot, maximum activity for 60 days. And so it's allowed me to be successful as an entrepreneur because I went through that. And I know that I would not be where I am today had I not gone through those terrible experiences.
I love it, brother. And it speaks so much to the legacy, you know, that you're building right now. I mean, obviously the businesses, the exit, you know, co-founding the businesses that you're in now and then the one you're launching in May. But the more important legacy I think you're going to leave is the weaponized adversity. That's such a great story. And I want to thank you so much for sharing that with us. And it's a great way to end this episode. With all the tactical stuff you gave us, and then the mindset of weaponized adversity was massive. Brother, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, guys, let's get building.